Welcome to Security Guy Radio at ASIS 2016. What's your name, sir?
Thank you, Chuck. My name is Gary Jones from Morpho.
And what's Morpho do?
So Morpho is the world leader in biometrics.
World leader? Wow.
Absolutely, yeah. Both by market share, but also in terms of our ongoing benchmarks that we participate in with NIST. We're proud to be a holder of many number one rankings in NIST benchmarks for fingerprint identification or fingerprint algorithms and facial recognition algorithms, as well as iris.
Now,
also,
tell me you don't do the fingerprint on my Samsung, because I can never get the damn thing to work. I think it's my fingerprints or something.
Indeed,
but
yeah.
Biometrics is a big word, and it's getting bigger every day.
Sure.
You guys have been in the space how many years?
We've been in this market for over 40 years.
40 years, wow. What was the first biometrics you guys were working on?
So it was fingerprints, and we started in the space of law enforcement and forensics.
Yeah.
So particularly for the purpose of solving crime, digitizing traditional ink records.
You're the guys that did that.
Correct.
So were you working on that, what's that machine we used to call it back in the 80s? We'd take the physical fingerprints, we'd stick it in the machine. It was like a fax, kind of.
Yes,
and then it sent it somewhere and digitized it. That was very high technology
indeed.
In 84. You guys were involved in that process.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
What we call back record conversion, where we took legacy databases with ink and paper records, digitized those so that they can be searched in real time, you know, much, much more efficient. Also helps you to do things like duplicate searches to clean up legacy databases as well.
That's fabulous. Now, I'm all for biometrics.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a picture of my nasty iris or fingerprint or whatever, I don't care. And people worry that taking your biometrics is taking your soul. Or, you know,
Sure. There's
all kinds of arguments for it. I think it's pretty safe. There are some concerns about it. How do you guys address that social aspect of it? Because we know technically this is the best place to go. We know that we have to have biometrics on our banking software and things like that, or we're going to be compromised.
Sure.
But it's a hard sell sometimes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So very, very good question, and one that's very close to our hearts. So it's different, obviously, in application by application. So in the world of law enforcement and forensics, you have no choice.
That's an easy one, right?
You want to catch criminals, you have to have these databases. When it comes to commercial uses, whether it's for financial payment systems, for things like membership systems, what's really important is to deploy these systems in what we call an opt-in fashion.
Oh.
When you give consumers the option to use biometrics, you typically find that the adoption rates are very high because people don't feel pressured. But sometimes these systems have to be mandatory to maintain security for all users.
Right.
Okay, so you don't create loopholes. And when that, you know, another angle to therefore look at is how you store the data. And this is where perception is important, or understanding is important. Commercial systems can be deployed in such a way that the source biometric, in other words, the actual image, is not stored or used. For example, think about a fingerprint. What we all understand to be a fingerprint, an actual image with loops and
that's what people think.
Ridges and valleys, etc. Most systems today that leverage fingerprint biometrics store something called a template, where the image is actually completely discarded, and only unique features are stored in this template.
And as a
really
one or
a
zero or something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
as
okay,
a one
good.
Or a zero, so it's digitized. And the important point is it's essentially becomes a mathematical representation of your biometric. So that is a very key component to making sure that users are more comfortable with what's
stored. A great way to explain it, too. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand that sometimes the failure in these systems is where they take, let's forget the actual image, because most people don't do that anymore,
right.
I assume.
Uh-huh.
But they digitize it, they give it a one and a zero. But I'm not explaining this properly, but they make the mistake of keeping the two components of this thing together. So one's the identity and one's the fingerprint. And now we know that that's Chuck's fingerprint. And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And people have problems with that.
Right.
But you guys address that by making sure it's really anonymous in a way, only to the math on the computer, right? Is that a good way to describe it?
So that's a certain part of it. So, for example, depending on the application, you might separate the user demographics from the actual template itself. Sometimes, obviously, there has to be a direct link in a particular database. But again, it's about the nature of the biometric data that's stored. And a key question that's often faced is, can you reverse engineer an image from the template? And inherently, most biometric systems are engineered so that that cannot be done.
Most.
So you protect that source data.
Morphos, for sure.
And I say most, because, again, it depends on the quality of the system that you're buying.
Yeah, it's so scary out there. I just heard something in Black Hat where somebody has figured out a way to take a radio signal, put it in Audacity, which is a free audio program, run it backwards, and get the data out of it.
It's
amazing. I mean, you got to be careful about this stuff. What kind of biometrics are on the horizon? We have fingerprints, kind of the first standard. We went to the iris, not retina iris, right?
Just iris.
Yeah, retina's sci-fi movies.
Retina's fallen away. Yeah, absolutely.
But see, I kind of stopped there with biometrics. I say, what else could there be? There is more, though.
So the three dominant modalities in the market are fingerprints, face, and iris. The main shift that we're starting to see now is a drive for more and more contactless technologies. So even fingerprints, the big evolution in the fingerprint space has been from contact-based devices to contactless at high speed. So for example, a product that we have called the Morpho Wave, which allows you to wave your hand at very high speed over a sensor.
Oh, I saw that.
Instead of touching a sensor.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, so that gives you the benefit of hygiene, but also takes away the traditional issues of when I make contact with something, how much pressure do I have to apply?
Right.
Are my fingers wet or dry? All of those issues go away.
And you have more points of identification.
Correct.
Because with all, maybe not so hard to fake one thumb, but five fingers may be more difficult.
Yeah, exactly. That's
now, let's talk about that opt-in point you brought up.
Yeah.
People are more likely to use it if it's an option than if it's forced.
Correct.
See, I would be a very bad evil genius that ruled the world, because I would say we're all going to use biometrics because that's the right thing to do because it's the safest way to do it.
Yeah.
Why don't banks just say, you know what, if you don't use biometrics, you can't use our banking system.
Right.
They would save a lot of money.
Absolutely.
I think they would, in any customers they would lose, I think they would regain it by not having the losses. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think?
Well, we see different strategies. So, for example, we've had customers that do a pure opt-in where they say, you know, if you want to use a driver's license to get into, and I'll give you an example. We've had a very large and popular gym deployment in the U.S. for the last 5 years, where they have several million users enrolled, over 500 locations, and they give their members the option to either use their fingerprint to get in or use their driver's license.
Okay.
The vast majority, and I'm talking very close to 100%, choose to use their biometric because of the sheer convenience, because they don't want to have to carry keys or wallets with them into the gym.
And I wouldn't want you to have my driver's license number because you can do other things with that.
Correct.
Yeah. And is it all anonymous, in other words? I mean, they know that this is a good fingerprint, but the gym doesn't know it's my fingerprint. Is
well,
that the
they
idea
do link it to your membership profile because they need to know if you're a paid member or not, right?
Which is a
common commercial issue. But back to your really good question, you know, what about enforcing a standard? So depending on the country or the vertical market, we do see some applications where banks make biometric enrollment mandatory.
Right.
In fact, sometimes it's a government standard that unless your biometrics are registered, you're not going to get a bank account. But we're not quite there yet where it's, you know, something that's deployed internationally. We see it going in that direction. But I think that it all depends on the return, you know, what you're trying to get out of the system as to how much you can enforce the use of any given biometrics. You also have to cater for the fact that not everybody has hands. So some people might not have a fingerprint.
You know,
some people might have.
I didn't think about that. Yeah. You're right. Or it's not really, you know, it's worn off because you're a Mason or something.
Correct.
Yeah.
And in any biometric system, even an iris or a face, you always can have a small percentage, it's very small, of people that cannot enroll.
Right.
But again, your good systems will cater for those people better than others and also give you other ways of dealing with them. So we want to make the products as universal as possible.
Do you guys deal in voice?
We do voice as well, but it's one of those that has a much lower level of security than the three that I mentioned.
That's interesting.
Because of the ability of things like replay attack, you don't have the ability to determine if it's a genuine sample that you're matching. Not as easily, for example.
Because you see in the sci-fi movies that every voice is unique and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But not really completely.
Not as much as some of the other biometrics, as I mentioned, especially when it comes to spoof detection. Also, the resilience to external factors. You know, if you're doing voice recognition, how much does the ambient noise or surrounding noise affect the sample you're getting? So when it comes to biometrics, it's not only a function of scientific accuracy, but also how they work in the real world.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think the best combination is as many as you can put together.
Correct.
So if I had 4 points of biometric identification, chances of it being somebody else,
right,
lot
Exactly.
Slimmer, right?
Yeah.
What do you think the mobile business? Are you in the mobile space?
We are in the mobile space.
Now, are you on the side where you're providing the software for a mobile manufacturer, or are you developing the process for them? Or because I know it's not clear to the consumer who owns a biometric. So if Samsung puts out a phone,
right,
and they got a fingerprint on there, is that Samsung's problem? Is it Morpho who contracts with them? How does that all work?
So again, our space is more on the high end of the market with the very, very secure systems. So we don't work as much in the consumer-facing world today. Obviously, in the consumer-facing world, cost is a big driver. So some of the professional biometric systems just are cost prohibitive to put into normal consumer devices.
Right. But here's where I'm going with this.
Yep.
I think your phone very shortly is going to be your mandatory device. It's going to be your key.
Right, right.
And you're going to have to, my vision is you're going to carry your biometrics on your own phone.
Yep.
And that's going to be click, scan, open, close, buy money, take money, right?
Sure.
And then, you know, that might be a place where that, like anything, you start at the high end and eventually the consumer gets it. So your applications are more like, you know, Fort Knox and NASA and the government stuff and really high end where it's super high end security.
Right.
Do you find that those agencies, let's call them agencies, let's say the governments, their compliance piece where they have all these rules, regulations, is that tough market for you guys to be in?
Definitely. You know, we do, because of the nature of our customers, we get very heavily involved in IT security compliance.
Right.
Because we have to make sure that the devices are well protected on the network. And we have to make sure that the PII data is very secure.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, that's not always up to us. There's a lot of reliance on the customer themselves to have a secure network. But obviously, on the devices that we produce, that's a big part of our security policy, is to make sure that the devices are built with the whole principle of preventing attacks, you know, managing intrusion, risk, and so on.
Yeah. Internet of Things? What are you guys working on with that?
It'll certainly be there, because, you know, the other thing that is clear in the last two or three years is the heightened awareness of consumers, typical consumers, of biometrics, like you mentioned, using your phone.
Right.
So we're seeing more interest in a variety of applications and more willingness by the typical consumer to use biometrics just for convenience factors, whether it's opening your garage door or making a purchase on your refrigerator.
Yep. Well, I want you to come out and install a biometric lock on my refrigerator so my daughter doesn't come in and eat all my health food that I buy for her.
Right.
Little brat. All right, Gary, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
Fascinating
for your
conversation. Absolutely. Thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Very good. Very interesting.